This is The Topic is Trek, episode 43 for Friday, April 26, 2019. Gorn to the future. Be back soon. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! If I should also include a star date when we open this show. It seems like it needs a star date, but I'll have to figure out how to do those and maybe a captain's log. And well, that's for another day. For right now, hi, I'm Clinton Allvord, one of your Topic is Trek co-hosts, and we have the full crew this week. So beaming in to join me, first of all, are Mr. Craig Stepp, or is Mr. Craig Stepp?
Hello. Oop.
Oh, and being very enthusiastic, clearly.
Hi.
Wow, he appeared, then he beamed in. That's really hard to do.
I was phoning it in, and then I beamed in.
Oh, you phoned it in every time. Never mind.
Just like Bella Oxmix. Now, we're coming over there with some heaters. You hear?
I hear the other voice. Mother. Is he going to beam in afterwards as well? And also, Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
How are you doing? It's good to be back.
Well, apparently I'm doing, I don't know.
There's, I left this thing running all the whole week. Who knew?
And batteries are awesome in it.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's got one of those power sources constantly recharging.
Just wish I knew what it did.
Well, it's a machine that goes ping, is what it is.
Ping.
So I went online the other day. I said, oh, you know, I forgot the last time we did the show, we talked about the Deep Space Nine documentary showing in theaters for one evening only. And I went to the site. Fortunately, I remembered yesterday because the theater that they're showing it in is not that big and there were not that many seats left. So it's going to be a full house in the theater that we're going to. I don't know if you guys are going to try to catch it on the big screen.
I wanted to, but I'm actually going to be vacationing. So, I won't be near a theater.
What's the date?
May 13th. 13th.
Yeah. I will be in a foreign country.
So I'll be holding down the fort, doing the duty for the show.
Yes.
And watching it on the big screen.
I'm going to purchase it, though, as soon as it's available. Because I didn't get in on the Kickstarter thing. Was it Kickstarter, Indiegogo? I didn't get in on it. I didn't really realize it until after it was already over.
It's not showing on like the biggest screen that they've got, but definitely it's going to be a lot of people there. Some, it should be a fun time watching it.
Uniforms, right? You're going to do uniforms, right?
I'm thinking maybe Marines or no, I don't know. It's, I don't know. Or maybe a butler or
butler.
I don't know. I'll think of something.
Yeah.
But be that as it may, and it may be that way, it is time to open up subspace chatter. Right, Charlie?
You wanted the subspace chatter?
I did.
I don't think we need any of that.
You don't need that subspace chatter.
Vindicated.
You were right. You were right indeed. All right, let's get into our very first story, which broke today. And today being the secret sauce is we're actually recording the show before Friday so we can get it to you on a timely basis. But this news came out that a CG animated Star Trek show is coming to Nickelodeon and it's been officially announced. We've heard rumors of this before. Mm-hmm. This story comes to us from Trek Movie, one of our favorite sources. The Star Trek universe continues to grow with another animated series, this time for Nickelodeon. First reported to be in development earlier this year, today CBS Television Studios officially announced the green light of a new animated Star Trek, which will debut exclusively on Nickelodeon.
It's all Tribbles.
Yeah, well, then it's going to be easy to animate. Touted as an opportunity to expand Star Trek for a new generation of fans, the show is being developed by Emmy Award winners Kevin and Dan Hageman, who also did Trollhunters and Ninjago. According to CBS, the new untitled, why are they always untitled, original CG animated series.
They stole the title from the Picard show.
I have a thought on that in a second. CG animated series following a group of lawless teens who discover a derelict Starfleet ship and use it to search for adventure, meaning, and salvation.
So a bunch of teens running around the galaxy in a starship.
Cruising the galaxy.
Could possibly go wrong, Bill and Ted.
Yeah. And what is this derelict Starfleet ship? I don't know. They come across the Discovery all of a sudden or something? I don't...
Thousands of years in the future.
Oh, it's derelict, and it sounds like that. Oh, okay, well,
we're familiar with derelict things.
Absolutely. I think it's going to be also a bit confusing now because you're going to have news coming out at some point about this series and Lower Decks, and I'm worried about people being confused about... Also, I think some of the After Treks they said were going to be animated as well.
Oh, interesting.
So what?
Really?
Yeah, it's going to be really hard to distinguish. Well, which... It used to be really easy, you know?
It was animated Trek, series.
One thing.
Yeah.
Well, in all fairness, this is on Nickelodeon, and the Lower Decks will be on All Access, I think.
Oh, right. The animated series used to be on Nickelodeon.
That's true, but yeah, so it sounds... I'm also interested that it says exclusively on Nickelodeon. Now, we know that for Discovery, it's on All Access, and then it's separately on another service in Canada, and then it's Netflix the rest of the world. So does that mean this series is just going to be accessible in the U.S.? It doesn't talk about a distribution channel outside of the United... I think there are versions of Nickelodeon in other countries, so maybe that's a generic statement about Nickelodeon.
Hmm.
We'll get more details of that as we go along, of course. But all right, so leading into my next story, which is about another thing in production, here's my theory, because we're going to talk about the untitled Picard series. And I was saying to my wife, Bonnie, last night, what if that's the name of it? And they could say, we've been telling you the name all along. It's the untitled Picard series.
Who's on first?
Well, maybe this is not going to be the case. But we have some exciting news about the untitled Picard series.
From TrekMovie.com. Today, Monday, April 22nd, which was 2 days ago. According to this timeline, depending on which universe you're in. It is the first day of production for the new Star Trek series, The Untitled Show, featuring Sir Patrick Stewart returning in the role of Jean-Luc Picard, as we've all been anticipating for a long time, coming to CBS All Access later this year. That's 2019 as you're listening to this. Early on, producers for the Picard show said they were targeting a mid-April start of production and recently had talked up how production would be starting soon. While some reports have had the show set to begin last week, Trek Movie has confirmed that today is the first day of shooting. Pew, 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 pew. And according to the latest issue of the industry newsletter Production Weekly, the Picard show will be in production for around 5 months. Whew, that's a good long job. With wrap-up currently planned for September 16th. Unlike Star Trek Discovery, which shot in Toronto, Canada, production for the Picard show is taking place in Southern California, fueled by the cool $15.6 million tax break from the California Film Commission.
Oh, yeah!
The first two episodes are being directed by Hanel Culpepper, with Doug Arniakoski. Now I'm playing
Craig.
There
you go. I think you got it.
Arniakoski, how about that? As second unit director. He's directing only the second unit. The first season of the show is structured as a highly serialized arc of 10 episodes, which Stewart describes to be like a 10-hour movie. Directors will... I'm not sure who that was supposed to be, but maybe it was Geordi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Directors will shoot in two-episode blocks with Patrick Stewart's Star Trek The Next Generation co-star Jonathan Frakes set to direct the second block of episodes 3 and 4.
So that's an interesting take. I wonder why they're doing it in these blocks of two like that, especially when you're talking about being a
10-hour movie. Like,
yeah, it's seems like you might have some
continuity
things
going on here.
Well, we know when Jonathan Frakes was talking on the Trek cruise that when you have these directors come in, a lot of stuff is already established for them. You know, this is the look of the show. This is the pacing of the show. He talked
who
about the
does
fact.
That? Is it the producers, the writers? Who?
I think it's the producers come up with that and say, like, he talks about some shows where the camera, unless it's something really important, is never static. It's always moving some way. And you notice on Discovery, a lot of times you have those 360 spins and, you know, whooshes back and forth and lots of things going on. But when you have a, you know, something very specific going on, the camera will hold on a shot. So that a lot of that is set for the director. So I think really it's more a case of working with the actors within those confines and of stuff. So he should step into it in pretty good shape. And he, as we know, he's got lots of experience directing, including directing Discovery. So that's something that's, we talked about something that's going to be in production. We talked about something that is now in production.
Yep.
And up next, Craig is going to talk about something that, will it be in production? We don't know.
It would like to be in production.
Yes.
So fans have been petitioning to get Anson Mount and Ethan Peck and company back in the groove on the Enterprise for a spinoff, you know, of the years before Kirk and Spock actually took hold of the bridge. And there's been a petition, and I'm just going to kind of summarize this because this article is everywhere. But there's been a petition with, over 24,000 names or people have signed the petition to get a spinoff show with Anson Mount and Ethan Peck. And Anson Mount had replied on his Facebook page saying that he's obviously heard about this this effort to get a spinoff show. And he said, "I'm humbled and deeply touched by the amount of love. I have never received such gratitude. Please know that my gratitude at having been given this opportunity to walk in Captain Pike's boots is equaled only by that which I feel for the Trek family's devotion. Seriously, thank you from the bottom of my heart." Very nice comment there. So not only has he responded, but I think Ethan Peck said, "That would be cool."
That's not what Spock would say.
No.
He would just say fascinating.
It would be logical, yes.
It's a Trek for today.
I also think I'm not sure if the article talks about it,
but
I think that also Alex Kurtzman had said we hear what you're saying. It was very non-committal, but it's like okay. Oh, there's a it does talk about him in there as well.
I got the article right here. He said, I lost my place. He said that fans have been heard. This is from Alex Kurtzman. "Anything is possible in the world of Trek. I would love to bring back that crew more than anything. It was a huge risk for us. One of the most gratifying things is to see how deeply the fans embraced Pike, Spock, Number One, and the Enterprise. The idea of getting to tell more stories with them would be a delight for us all. I have a feeling, though, it's got to be some. They had to have kind of seen that a little bit as during production that it was a good thing.
Well, based on the fact that the audience fell in love with the characters of Discovery in the first season so fast, that this was very foreseeable.
That's what I'm saying. I think during production, I'm sure something's been, you know, rattled around there. I can't believe that they would build that whole bridge and not, you know, for what, a couple episodes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they had to put it off to the side, for now, just kind of create it up for, you know, whatever they're going to be producing next season. But well, it could be one of these things also, because they claim that they were just, you know, contracted for one season. You know, it could very well be something where, well, we were taking a risk. We don't know how this is going to work out. You know, fans may hate the idea, saying, oh, why are you, you know, picking the bones of a character that, you know, what, you know, the actor who originally did the part wouldn't be able to play it and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And then we're maybe a bit surprised by reaction, you know, because they finished filming before we saw anything.
Right.
And so they probably said, well, we like the way this is going. There's kind of a groove here, but we still don't know how fans are going to react to it. And now they find out that a lot of people, well, I did post the article over on our Facebook page, and I got some comments over there. I can't remember all of them, but I think Crazy Joe was commenting that mm-hmm. one of his concerns is that if you greenlit this show, that you would have Discovery and whatever this show would be called, the unnamed Star Trek series. How about that? Because there isn't that as already. Both
the Pike Chronicles.
Yeah, both Starship based. Mm-hmm. And he said that the production team in the previous run with Next Generation and so forth tried to never overlap two things like that. You had the crossover between Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, which was on a space station. Then Deep Space Nine crossed over to Voyager, which is another spaceship. So he said there's be kind of confusion, like are they the same?
Was that a conscious decision? Or just the way it worked out?
I don't know. You'd have to ask JMS. Oh, Babylon 5 sting.
I got that reverse.
I don't know if it was, but then you also have to figure out, well, how is Section 31 going to be based? Is it?
That's going to be an unnamed show, but they're just going to leave it unnamed.
Well, no, I mean, are they going to be on a ship like the one that we saw in season 2 of Discovery? Or is it going to be unimportant what the ship is and it's more about missions? So, you know, would that be a third Starship based thing if Section 31 was, and we don't know the Picard series. We have no idea if the Picard series is based off of a Starship.
I thought he was supposed to have some kind of ship off and on, but not necessarily be all space based.
He's got to take care of his vineyards.
He does. Well, he brings them with him. He was watching Silent Running. He said, I can take that stuff with me.
They had 24,000 signatures on that.
Over 24,000 is about slightly over 24,000.
Okay, we didn't even get 3 on ours to bring back the Captain April series. But I suppose, you know, it was posted on the topic as Trek.com. So what do you expect?
Burn. Wait a minute, that's a burn against us.
I like how you're deciding.
Yeah. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I'm deciding it's a bad thing. I win. Maybe. Point to me.
Yeah, Chuck broke Clinton.
Well, let's move on from something that might possibly be to something that now is going to be. And I think we might have talked about this before. I know that there were some, this is about a comic book series. And I know that we talked about some in the last episode where they couldn't say anything about what they were producing. I don't think it was IDW, but it might've been. But
I just learned what IDW stands for this week.
And?
I don't wanna.
Oh, no, that I don't really think that's, I don't know
yeah,
if that's
it's, really. It's a security protocol. It's like, I don't wanna take care of security.
I see. Uh-huh. Well, this one is IDW, or I Don't Wanna, announces miniseries to explore the aftermath of the Star Trek Discovery Season 2 finale.
There's aftermath?
There is.
All that junk they shot up with the big fight scene that was hanging around in space?
Well, that's more like shrapnel and so forth than it is. That's not
technically aftermath. What does the category of aftermath consist of?
Well, I will tell you, today's IDW announced the details for their Star Trek Discovery comic miniseries, which they teased at WonderCon last month. So it probably was the same thing. Titled Star Trek Discovery Aftermath, the third IDW miniseries tied to the CBS All Access series will explore the repercussions of the second season finale. According to IDW's announcement, the story will focus prominently on Spock. Here is how it describes the new series. In the aftermath of the 2019 finale, everything in Discovery has changed. And as Laurel and Pike try to negotiate a fragile peace, Spock finds himself grappling with the fallout from what happened with Michael Burnham and the mysteries about her still left to be unraveled. The three-issue series will share the same writing team as the previous two miniseries, with Discovery staff writers Kristen Bayer and Trek comic vet Mike Johnson. Art will be provided by Tony Chastain, who also worked on the previous two titles. The new series shows how Pike, Spock, Laurel, and the rest of the cast deals with the fallout from the mind-blowing events of season two. You get a feeling like they thought they couldn't really still say what happened in case it would spoil it. Just mind-blowing events of season two. And we couldn't be happier that Tony Chastain is back aboard for this story. So I don't, it's interesting that it's all going to take place here. Here being, you know, it's kind of here versus.
Started to say present day, but yeah.
Yeah. Present day doesn't really work either. Cause well, that didn't happen last week. I guess there was some anticipation when I read this at first. We're going to find out. Did they? No, we're not going to find out. What happened to Discovery? We're just going to be dealing with Pike and Spock and the Klingons and so forth at that point. But it's still an interesting thing, because I've got a feeling we won't, after what we just talked about, we probably won't get back to anything going on with the Enterprise for quite a long time, if at all. So it's good to at least have some kind of follow-up.
Until we get that spinoff.
Until we do. But I don't know. You guys have any thoughts on, you know, this comic series?
I'm down for it. I've enjoyed the other ones. I need to go back and I know they had a lot of mirror stuff with TNG. I need to go back and read that. But I like to read the comics. I even some of the novels. I've read some of the old novels.
So. Yeah, I was gonna say I'm more of a novel guy than a comic guy, but I'm open for it.
Well, remember, Free Comic Book Day is coming up. I have no idea if this is out in time for it. It wouldn't be a free comic, but I don't know if it'd be out in time for Free Comic Day. Does it say when it's releasing? Did I read that?
Free Comic Book Day in 2019 is May 4th.
Actually. Right. It's always the first Saturday in May.
That also happens to be Star Wars Day.
Yes. I don't think there'd be a free Star Wars comic either.
Well, Chuck, you and I'll have to hit a comic book shop on the way.
In Vegas.
Okay. All right.
I don't know of any comic book stores between Phoenix and Vegas. We're not going up to Flagstaff. We did that once.
We'll make our plans later, not on the show. All right. We're going to now go from the realm of the unreal to the realm of kind of the surreal in a way with this story from real life, I guess. I don't know.
GeekWire.com, Bill Gates channels inner Star Trek geek to riff on shapeshifters for Mosquito Week. Is that like Shark Week? Only
it is,
smaller?
But yeah, it just hurts a lot more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds like a lawyer show anyway. It's Mosquito Week at Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, a time to focus on the global campaign to eradicate malaria and other mosquito-borne diseases. And if delving into the nuts and bolts of developing an effective malaria vaccine doesn't grab you, how about adding a Star Trek angle? That's exactly what Microsoft co-founder Bill Gates is doing in today's Gates Notes posting to kick off Mosquito Week. And he has a number of tweets here. Bear with me. When I was younger, I loved science fiction. The author I read was Robert Heinlein. The Moon is a Harsh Mistress was a favorite. As a teenager, I remember watching an episode of the original Star Trek where the bad guy is a shapeshifter who turns himself into a second Captain Kirk. There's an epic scene at the end where Spock has to figure out which one is the imposter. Shapeshifters are not just the stuff of science fiction, though. We have them right here on Earth. To kick off hashtag Mosquito Week, I wrote about the world's deadliest shapeshifter and what scientists are learning about how to beat it. So how did Gates go from science fiction to epidemiological fact when even Mr. Spock would find the logical progression fascinating? The malaria virus is transmitted by a tiny parasite that mosquitoes carry from host to host as they go about their blood-sucking ways. it's nice to have a vaccine that can train your immune system to recognize the parasite and fight it off before the virus can take hold of its victim. Unfortunately, the parasite has developed into its own defense strategy against that. So, have you been to any malaria countries?
I don't know. At least Bill didn't release mosquitoes this time when he was.
I know. Was that a TED talk? I remember, or something like that. He opened a.
Yeah, and they were all, you know, they weren't infected, but it's just like, okay, Bill, I think posting on Twitter is a better approach.
Hey, look, Bill, will you stop that? Put those back in there.
I don't know. Have you visited any such countries? Chuck, you were asking.
In 1980, I went to Honduras and we had to take some malaria pills. And just so happened, in my high school health and first aid class, they said, we want you to write about, I think it was actually write about malaria. And it was after I came back. And I filled up the front and back of the paper and he gave me a B.
Said, jerk.
A B? He said, oh, I didn't see the note at the bottom said over. He didn't realize I wrote a whole second page to this.
Wow. Really, really a thorough job of reading that, huh?
I give you a C for teaching.
Yeah, it sounds like something I did. I go the one time I go over and beyond for an assignment, you know, you get like a B because he lost half the page or something. I don't know.
Right.
Something weird about getting a B on something about mosquitoes. I don't know. Something that just doesn't make sense. And
hey, you try spelling Anopheles mosquito.
No, thank you. I can't even spell mosquito. So, all right, let's end on a lighter note with a story that Craig is going to tell us about.
We're done already? There's like three
more
stories.
We've got lots more show to do. Well, and
tell you what, Clinton and I'll sign off. You can go ahead and just read through the rest of them.
There you go.
And from comicbook.com.
Yeah. Anyways, Star Trek's Jonathan Frakes meme. Is how do you say that? Is
meme.
It meme?
Meme.
Because I always say meme to myself.
Meme.
Anyway.
Meme.
My sister is meme.
We're the knights that say meme. All right. Star Trek's Jonathan Frakes meme is here to call out all your wrongs. So. according to Star Trek, The Next Generation actor Jonathan Frakes, you're wrong. Jonathan, you're wrong. Frakes telling a viewer you're wrong in a new meme by YouTuber Wintermont.
Wintermont. That is his real name.
Yeah.
Or her real name.
Yeah. The meme's popularity began when Wintermont posted the 47-second video compilation of Frakes saying a phrase on YouTube and Twitter. You know, you're wrong. In the video, Frakes also says other delightful variants like you're wrong, such as it's a total fabrication. It's
I really want to see this. Hold on.
Oh, it's on there.
It's very bizarre.
Not this time. We created it. Not this time. No, not this time. It's totally made up. Pure fiction. It's fiction. Yeah.
Oh, this isn't even from Star Trek.
No,
it's from. If you'd let me finish.
Pause that meme. Or meme. Pause that meme. There we go.
The meme comes from a show called Beyond Belief, Fact or Fiction that Frakes hosted after finishing work as Commander William T. Riker on Star Trek. On the show, Frakes presented stories that in some way would go against logic or feature supernatural elements. Viewers would have to determine if the events occurred were completely fabricated. After the story concluded, Frakes would tell the viewer they had witnessed a real story or smugly present it as it was fiction, as seen in the video above. Of course, you're wrong, isn't the only meme centered around Frakes. During his time playing William T. Riker on Star Trek Next Generation, Frakes had a special way of sitting down.
Oh, the chair video, yes. Yeah,
that was dubbed by fans as the Riker maneuver. He would put one leg over the chair and sit down. It was kind of weird.
Yes. It became his signature move.
I know. You know, I was like, is that how they sit down in Canada? I don't know where he got that from.
Never saw Shatner.
It's not another planet, Craig.
Yeah, maple syrup and we sit down with Slinging one leg over the chair.
Thank you for offending all our Canadian listeners now.
You know all of them.
But yeah, definitely a meme that this you're wrong one. If somebody posts something and you want to call them out saying, nope, that's not true, feel free to post this to them. Hey, just 47 seconds of being told you are wrong.
This will go with me sending the link out that said, you know, let me Google that for you.
Yeah.
You know.
Totally fabricated. We made it up. You're wrong.
Yeah.
Fooled you.
All right. And that concludes our stories. But you say, could that possibly be all the Star Trek news that happened in the last week?
I'm sure it is.
Well, you would think so. You would think so. However, you would be wrong.
What?
Because we have, if you go to the show notes for episode 43 over at thetopicistrek.com, we have links to 30. That's right, 30 additional stories we did not have time to cover.
We had to use a computer to calculate how many stories we had.
No, I counted them. One, two, and then I had to keep starting over because I would have to scroll the page.
M5, tell us what stories would be most popular on this week's show.
But be that as it may, and you can check out all those stories, plus links to all the stories we did talk about, so you can find a link to the Anson Mount petition for the Pike series and everything else we talked about. See the meme with Jonathan Frakes. Again, go over to the show notes for episode 43 over at thetopicistrek.com. But now it's time to close out Subspace Chatter with some random sound. There we go. Yes. Monty Python footstep. There we go. And it's time to head out on our main mission. But although we've talked a little bit about this around the edges, I think it's time to run ye old spoiler alert.
Oh, here it is.
Spoiler alert.
Because we're going to be talking about the final two episodes of season two of Star Trek Discovery, bizarrely called Such Sweet Sorrow and Such Sweet Sorrow Part Two. It's not part one and part two, just Such Sweet Sorrow and
it's like
part
Virginia
two.
And West Virginia, okay?
I guess so.
Dakota and North Dakota. No, North Dakota and South Dakota.
There's Craig showing his geography skills again.
North and South Carolina.
There you go. We've got two. These two episodes were written by Michelle Paradise, Jenny Lumet, and Alex Kurtzman, and directed by Olatunde Osunsanmi. They did have a better pronunciation of that name before my mouth stopped working.
Usunsanmi.
Here's Craig trying to help us.
Hey, you know what's funny is when they showed his name on the screen, I was like, who, what? And it looked like it had an eight.
An eight?
Yeah, the way that, maybe it was the two O's.
Like Ocho Cinco?
But I remember glancing up and I went, what? An eight? Whose name is that?
Well, a figure eight would be great, but that's another story altogether.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, rather than reading the descriptions that I normally read, I said, in a nutshell, Discovery must travel to the future to prevent the data it contains from falling into the hands of Control. That's pretty much what happens over the course of these two episodes. And it's a sweeping story which runs from very intimate to just these all-out space battles and little bits of time travel and then big time travel and all over the place.
People die.
So, yeah, people die. Well, yes, I think that's one. Why don't we talk about that first? Now, we just had an episode a very short time ago where we had a character that was a major character die. And now we have another one die, and this time it's Admiral Cornwell. How did you feel that another death happening so soon before this lessened this, or was it still impactful to you guys?
I wasn't really impacted by Admiral Cornwell. I don't know. I just never really connected with her character because she wasn't on there very much.
I would agree with that, too. She wasn't...
I mean, she appreciate her being around when she needed to be, but...
But she wasn't as fascinating as Arium was, to me anyway. Mm.
Mm. Mm. Well, I thought it was also an odd way to show what was happening in that scene. It was staged very bizarrely. You didn't kind of have any sweeping, let's call it a Star Trek moment of the sacrifice. It's kind of like, this is my, I got to do this thing. I'm going to do this thing. And okay.
Yeah,
I'm
like Kirk going down on the Enterprise B.
Generations.
It kind of, you know, and then you have Pike bizarrely not closing the door, but saying, I think I'll watch this and then I'll close.
I'm going to sit.
I'm going to enjoy this.
I'm going to watch a photon torpedo explode through the window.
Hey,
like,
that's popcorn. Very strong, the door closed down. He stays there. The popcorn.
Yeah.
This is going to be good. I know how it ends.
That transparent aluminum was really strong stuff.
There were a lot of things on both these episodes. I went, really? Did they just show that?
Well,
what do you have in mind? Like, what, name something else? Because I've got a bunch of notes here. But
well, they tore up the Enterprise like majorly, missing almost half of the saucer section.
Well, that's kind of what they said was going to happen when the thing blew up.
I know, but you know, the thing is, okay, you know the Enterprise has been around for a long time. I know they can repair that kind of stuff, but at some point you go, hey, look, we damaged this pretty much almost all the ship. Let's just scrap it.
There were a lot of moments where there's battle raging all around, but let's stop and have a dramatic moment for 5 minutes and tell me how much you're going to miss me and how much this isn't going to work. And
the thing that stuck out for me a lot, in that same regard was, it was very bizarre to have Sarek and Amanda show up in person. I'm thinking, aren't you supposed to be hiding from control? And I understand how Sarek found out where Burnham was through the Cutter, but I'm thinking, are you guys really close to Vulcan? Because the Enterprise is warping here as fast as it can, and it's not going to be there for quite a while. Where are you guys coming from? And maybe their position was a lot closer to Vulcan. I'm not sure we knew exactly where that was.
They did get there kind of
quick. I'm still processing the fact that she had to go backwards to go forwards.
Well, I understood. I mean, if she gets there to that point, right? And if she only leaps forward, she hasn't set the other stuff in motion. But so it is a case where she had
they
to
did
do
that really quickly, though. I mean, it wasn't even like she was taking part in any of that action. She would just pop in, quick montage of one or two short clips, and then pop out. Like, what did she actually do?
But you've already seen it all.
Glad that happened, because it's like, the only 14 episodes, I think we kind of remember these incidents, which you've also recounted several times.
They were entire episodes, yep.
So I didn't really need to spend a lot of time there. I think it just was showing that the angel shows up. And I think if you look at the episodes, this recounting them really quickly says, so that's why no one saw an angel. She just shows up to set the signal and leaves. Like, she doesn't have to be staying there.
She's just getting these parties together. Getting discovered to Kaminar, for example. So what... In the season storyline, what did her mother have to do with any of this? Other than, hey, I made a cool suit. Well, I'll make one too.
Let's think about that, shall we? I guess she's the one that discovered by going forward by mistake the 950 years, the events that happened. And then... is trying to,
but the original Red Angel that set those signals was Michael Burnham,
right? But
so how did it all of a sudden become, oh, we've trapped the Red Angel, it's your mother?
Well, her mother introduced her to the technology for time travel.
Yeah, that seemed a little contrived to me. Anyway, it didn't really.
I think it maybe was a case of they thought it was who had actually, well, it was her mother on Vulcan. Because
that appeared to mother, Spock?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or smaller, younger.
Because she was the one warning Spock that something is going to happen to Michael. So you could have, if you told the story differently, you could have Michael telling Spock that something's going to happen to young Michael, but...
Yeah, did we, I'm just wondering, did we need Michael's mother at all in this story?
Well, you'd have to come up with why, who invented the suit and why would somebody on Discovery be, I suppose you'd have to have a whole section about how this suit was developed before you could even get into the story, right? Because otherwise, where is the suit appearing from?
There was a lot to process in this season. Remember, we said there were something like 8 different storylines going,
yeah, threads. And they're not, they're mostly wrapped up, except the big question about, all right, now the Discovery is gone. Oh, and by the way, my first note in here is you get to find out who's a real nerd. And who is it? Because everybody's saying they jumped 950 years into the future. No, they jumped 930 years into the future.
Nerd.
They told us that. It was right on the screen.
Right. Well, she says, my mother said she jumped forward 950 years. That was 20 years ago. Right. I'm setting us for 930 years.
Yep.
So Discovery jumped 930 years into the future. Nerd.
So we'll probably see her mom again.
Yeah, I'm assuming so. But another thought I have, and this is like half the stuff I'm writing for my article, which I've just is becoming this magnum opus, so I haven't finished it yet. But all right, so here's a question I have for you that was a thought piece when I was writing this article. Now, when her mother jumps forward to 950 years and everything is wiped out, mm-hmm. So she finds herself on Terra Elysium, or what's eventually going to be called Terra Elysium. And it's desolate like everything else because clearly, you know, it's been wiped out. Mm-hmm. So she jumps back. She pulls people there to start up New Eden and these other places, which we see in the early episode. All right. Now, when Michael is jumping forward, she says, and if I'm lucky, I will snap to the same point that my mother did, to Terra Elysium, where there is no technology, so Discovery will be safe there. And I'm thinking, are you guaranteed that in 930 years, they haven't said, you know, we really should start developing some tech?
Yeah.
Right.
I don't think it's a guarantee that there's no tech on Terra Elysium after 930 years.
Just because there was no tech on Earth 930 years ago doesn't mean that the 21st century is going to look the same.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering because, I mean, they do have that mostly in disrepair, but they do have equipment there. The one guy was sending out the signal. So it's not like they don't have any equipment that could be tech, and they may find, you know, for production of our crop, we should really build this. And since we built that, how about this other thing? Right. It's this other thing. And suddenly there's the industrial age in Terra Elysium. You know, I'm not sure I would buy into it's going to be this pastoral planet still. What are your thoughts on the amazing ability of Saru's sister to be able to fly a Ba'ul ship?
Again, very convenient.
Did the Ba'ul not show up themselves and said, sure, you're our sworn enemies and we just got to know you, but take our ships and fly away?
Maybe she killed a few Ba'ul and took over.
Well, you know, that's exactly what happened. Or they were. I take it back. I'm not going to say that's exactly what happened, but I would imagine that's what happened.
That she killed them and took the ship.
They overtook them. You know,
but that wasn't supposed to be the plan.
Right? They weren't supposed to be aggressive again. They weren't supposed to take over and make the Ba'ul subservient again. We're beyond that. We're better than our generations ago.
Sure, whatever.
You can't fight DNA.
I mean,
you just want to get your whale.
We were told.
Yeah.
We were told at the beginning of season two that everything was going to wrap up and it would be canon. I think the whole, we're not going to talk about that anymore, is just a little too convenient for the writers.
Yeah, I mean,
we were joking about that kind of stuff. It's like, okay, how come no one's ever heard of Discovery or Spore Drive or, and it's like, well, you know, it's been buried in a file somewhere. And I think we made a reference to the Indiana Jones crate in the warehouse.
Right.
Mulder and Scully are looking for it right now.
I mean, I think that a lot of this was, people are referring to it as fan service. And I'm thinking, well, in some ways it is. I will point out the same thing I pointed out last week, because it was in the article that I wrote for the previous episodes, was that there must have been some thought about doing this time travel from the beginning, because in the opening credits, every week from episode one, season one, you have what essentially are the time crystals floating around Discovery. So there, you would assume then there was some plan that the Discovery at some point was not going to be around in that particular part of the timeline.
So season three take place almost 1,000 years in the future. Is that what we're expecting now?
I'm expecting that it will take place there, but something has got to happen, because one person at least who's on that ship has to be doing a series about Section 31 after that.
Well, you don't know. Maybe she's doing Section 31 in the future.
Well, it's possible, but is she Section 31? I mean, who else is? So, I mean, unless that also takes place in 1,000 years from now, I'm kind of guessing that now. But if they make it back, that's just as bad, because right, no one is supposed to know that they survived.
Right.
Hey, you know, what's funny is, you know, what if they wrapped up the show, they're having the rap party and all that. Somebody goes, oh my gosh, we left Giorgio on the, on the Discovery.
Whoops.
Oh, crap.
Oh, what were we thinking? Do we have time for reshoots? No time for reshoots.
It just aired.
on the other hand, you could leave it in the future, and then the short treks that we saw that had, you know, the ship abandoned 1,000 years could quite easily take place, and just let the story run out for another 50 years out there.
I think that was the point of Calypso, because all of the short treks intersected with the season except for Calypso, and then all of a sudden there's,
did they?
Let's see.
Harry Mudd's didn't really.
Right, I'm sorry. Right, you're right. Yes, Harry Mudd's did.
Two out of four of them so far.
Right.
Well, three, because you got the Discovery in the future.
That doesn't necessarily mean.
And I can imagine 50 or 60 years go by, and then the Calypso take place.
Yeah, there's no direct correlation yet, but it stands to reason that because they're in the future, that's how they got 1,000 years, and it's still in pretty decent shape.
Right. And, you know, I mean, it's very convenient that they're talking about the same roughly time period, 1,000 years.
Yep.
So, I think those two definitely are related in some way. As far as the actual production on the episode went, we had some insane levels of CGI.
Yes.
With these space battles.
I started watching that space battle in the San Jose airport on my phone. And it was hard to watch. It was really hard. Like, I see lines going all over. I don't even know what's shooting at what. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of little micro ships shooting at other little micro ships. And apparently the strategy is deploy as many as you can and win. And then I got home and watched the second half of that battle on the 75-inch screen. And went, that's not any better. It's just insane.
It was chaotic. It was very chaotic. I was before... I realized that things have been updated a little bit, but on TOS, it was like you'd have done.
Yeah.
And they shoot a photon. And then the phasers. Sudden, here it's like, it was, you could have an epileptic seizure watching it.
Those poor people in the photon torpedo loading room are like,
yeah.
Oh my God.
I did like the sound effects on the Enterprise that were spot on. I mean, occasionally you heard, you know, one of those.
Oh yeah.
Or the doors. Shh, shh.
Actually, hey, you
don't hear those on Discovery.
Yeah. With the, I don't know if you're going to mention it here, Clinton, but you know, the buttons that they put on the panels on the actual bridge came from Ticonderoga.
Well, I know that they said that they had, I don't know if I knew that they came from Ticonderoga, but I know that they did use, I'll call them original, even though those are obviously not original, but original looking buttons, if you will, on the bridge. And it makes sense then that they would say, well, who has something that we can use that looks pretty accurate?
Well, come on. I thought it was really cool that they did that, but I was at the same time, I'm like, I bet the prop guy's going, I could like make those in like 10 minutes. Oh, come on. You got to ship them and I got to ship them back. I can just make them.
Oh, they got to go all the way to Canada. I know. Again, another slam in Canada.
What did you guys think of Poe?
Poe seemed different than she did in the short trek.
It was Stowaway or a Runaway. What was it?
Runaway. She seemed even more hyper.
Like Tilly?
Than she was before. Maybe she's done a lot of experimenting trying to get ice cream to work. I don't know.
Too much ice cream.
I thought for a minute that she was going to find herself going into the future with the Discovery, because here she was making the big deal. She was staying on board and then she's off the ship and not going, that she's just, you know, watching Discovery leave.
Right.
So I thought, you know, I felt a bit of a fake out there. Maybe me trying to read too much into what was going on that she was going to be there. Maybe it wasn't a fake out to a lot of people, but,
I liked her. I thought she worked well.
I think that she would be, I think, it would be awesome to have her with Jet Reno.
Oh, wow. I was just going to mention Jet. I was like, those two would be,
a lot of
engineering smarts, but just two totally different personalities.
Yeah. You got a touch of that. While we're, you know,
right.
That was pretty cool.
I love the dynamic between the two of them and Giorgio. You know, it's like, oh good. We all love each other now. Isn't that nice? We're all friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, she had some great lines in this episode as well as, you know, to Leland. Congratulations, everybody hates you.
Yes. Now I want to hear you scream.
And then we had that insane practical effect of the zero-G battle in the corridor.
All I could
Discovery.
Think of was 2001 A Space Odyssey. That was or the old movies where the guy's dancing on the wall, then dancing on the ceiling.
Well, that's exactly what they did.
This is one of the oldest movie effects, and it still works.
Yep. I mean, that's exactly what they did. There's video of it. The director has a diary that's on, I think, StarTrek.com. And one of the things they show the video of the turntable, a sense of that it's on. You can hear them yelling, slow down, speed up, slow down, to the guy running the thing.
I was ready for Lionel Richie to walk in.
Well, speaking of 2001, I mean, we had a very, very, you know, into the Stargate when Burnham enters the wormhole. You have very much callbacks to 2001 journey there, which I appreciated. We talked about the Enterprise bridge and, you know, the looking pretty cool there.
I thought it was awesome. I wanted to see more of that ship.
Yeah. It had lots of hints of everything, including blinky lights, little square blinky lights way up at the top of the thing.
Yeah. I think it was
colors.
A very good callback. I know it's updated to kind of look at a little more on the aesthetic.
They got Discovery. The widescreen instead of the 4x3.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But I thought they did a great job and it looked really nice.
And it was interesting to see one thing you don't really appreciate about what distinguishes that. Why does that bridge have this different effect? And I said, that's it. That's one of the reasons. Because you have that guardrail around, you know, the front stations, the Kirk's chair, when we have your left, right, we're being hit. People like lean against that railing. Yeah. Whereas other ships, they just flail around because there's, you know, there's no railing for them to go against. She's, you know, so Pike had this one point where I said, it's just like Kirk, and he just, you know, lean hard against that railing and hold on.
Yeah.
I was fairly convinced, because Burnham started seeing the future happen the way the time crystals show, that by the end of the episode, Pike would be burned. But that did not happen. And I was surprised
I thought the photon was going to do something.
Right. And, I thought you're standing right next to the door. You know, first of all, you don't want to be standing there. The thing's going to blow up. And that's how you... But his vision was that he was rescuing somebody from the bridge, apparently.
Right. Well, I mean, it's the same thing. He's on... It's supposed to be the same telling of the story that you have in the menagerie, is that he is helping get cadets out when a baffle plate ruptures and he gets hit by the radiation, but he's still pulling the cadets out to get them to safety. So, yeah, I mean, that, since that essentially is written in stone there, although I do like his line, well, if this isn't my destiny, if I stay here, nothing can happen.
I can't die, right? Oh, that's playing with fire.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, speaking of the Enterprise bridge, it's not just the railing, but what sets that kind of bridge apart is the, which I did not realize, it was the orange color that they have on mm-hmm. all the doors and the railing and everything and the front of the console. That really sets it apart because it makes it kind of pop. And even in the TOS, you know, you got it everywhere. And same thing on the Enterprise. And
they didn't have the patio furniture, though.
Hey, the other thing I thought was cool was, speaking of like the set design.
Actually, I believe they did have the patio furniture.
The dinette set?
Yeah, they did have those chairs.
I like that little grid, you know, the little grid stuff.
Station had the moray pattern circle-y thing.
Slightly different. It was an updated version, but it was there.
I was talking about, like, you know, like, remember Kirk's quarters? They have the circle-y.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, those were in certain places too.
Yeah, in the corridor. They had in the corridors. So we're geeking out over that, and it's like, did we mention that we really weren't that serious? But
by the way, they do have the dinette set chairs.
Yep.
Speaking of, I know the battle scenes were chaotic, but they had some really cool visuals of the Enterprise from the outside.
The saucer section, I'm going to be a little nitpicky here, but the I believe it's a chamfer, the angle at which the top and bottom edge. meet, the angle, that wedge shape.
Yeah.
It was a steeper angle on this version of the Enterprise than it was on the classic.
Yeah.
Section had more of a bite to it.
Yeah. There definitely are differences. I mean, as we've even saw at the end of last season, there are definitely differences between them. I did appreciate that one shot where, when Burnham first shoots out of the bay and she's flying along and she just flies over the hull of the Enterprise. Yeah.
Did she have to get a running start and go into a racer's starting position? I didn't quite understand.
Did she compress the whole bay?
You could have done that, but I think the point was that they wanted that thing open as short a time as possible. They say, well, why don't you just stand right next
or to the opening?
It was more dramatic. It was in the script.
That's right. That's why I did it, because it was in the script. Well, I can't argue with that. Yeah. That's logic. We're running long, so I'm going to delay something until next week. I want to talk about a survey that I got about Star Trek Discovery. Actually, let me talk about it really quickly, because I think we can burn through. Now, neither of you guys got this survey, apparently.
I haven't seen it.
This came... And it was questions about Star Trek Discovery and All Access. And then I thought, oh, okay, he's going to ask me like three or four questions. No, this thing went on and on and on. It's, first of all, it asks you, are you familiar with any of these shows? And they're all CBS or CBS All Access shows. And
I did get the survey. It's very
bizarre, because the first, one of the ones on the list is Star Trek Discovery, and it's being sent to you because you watched Star Trek Discovery. So if you didn't check that one, I think maybe that's like, are you a robot? But they, you know, Murphy Brown and No Activity, The Neighborhood. But so you check out all those shows, and then it asks you, you know, well, who's been watching season two of Discovery? You and your partner, just you and another family member, or just another family member. And then it says, how big of a fan of Star Trek Discovery are you? And you rate that on a series of 1 to 10. Then it says, how did you hear about Star Trek Discovery? And it's like, okay, that was like 2 years ago. That's a bad time to be asking me how I heard about it.
Yeah.
And then on which social media platforms did you hear about Discovery? Because I checked off social media platforms. And so it's got a bunch of those, Twitter and Pinterest and Reddit and Instagram and Snapchat and all that kind of stuff. It just keeps going. And you mentioned that you watched Star Trek Discovery. Yes. Well, that's kind of why you sent me the survey. How satisfied are you, you know, with this? Very unsatisfied, unsatisfied, satisfied, or very satisfied. And then it goes on. How many of the 14 episodes of season two did you watch? And then it asks, did you watch them all in one sitting or week to week or in bunches? And then describe Star Trek Discovery to someone who hasn't seen it before. And, you know, it's great. Then it says, who was your favorite character on Star Trek Discovery? No, what is it? The question was kind of weird. It's like, which of the following characters from Star Trek Discovery did you most enjoy watching? And you can only choose one. And it lists everybody. You've got Pike and Burnham and Sarek and Tilly and every single person. And then you can fill in your own if you want to. And I thought, well, that's really a trick question. You can only put one person in.
Yeah.
So although we'll get to that in a second, then whoever you pick, well, why did you like that character the most? And you have to, you know, answer that question. Then what do you like most about Star Trek Discovery? And after you finish watching it, how likely are you to keep CBS All Access? We go on to say, if Star Trek Discovery is renewed for season three, how likely are you to watch the next season? Well, since it's already been renewed, and I've already said I'm a big, you know, fan, you would think I'd know that it's already been renewed. So I'm wondering if some of this is, they swap out other names if it's for some other thing. Then it talks about how much do you think you're interested in watching these other CBS All Access shows? And it mentions a bunch, including Twilight Zone and the untitled Picard Star Trek series and Star Trek Lower Decks. So it just goes on and on and on. And I thought, oh, clearly we must be almost done now. It was like 30 questions.
Too long for a survey. I give up.
I made it all the way through and I got to enter my name in braver for a $100 Amazon gift card, but it didn't even have one of those little progress bars on it.
Yeah. Just like,
that's disheartening.
You don't know how long you got.
Yeah. It could be like 400 questions. So the reason I wanted to get to that is because we're going to do our Warp Speed Roundtable. And my question, I thought it was unfair, I'm going to pose it to you guys as well. And which character from Star Trek Discovery have you most enjoyed watching?
And pick only one.
And pick only one, because the survey only lets you pick one. I will start with myself, just to give you guys a few extra moments. Since I had to pick only one, and it was really tough because there are at least three characters that I wanted to pick,
yep,
and maybe because it was top of mind, I picked Pike. I won't mention the other two characters because I can only pick one, but there were at least two other characters that I would like to have picked, but I had to pick one.
who's your second and third runner ups?
All right. So my second and third in no particular order, cause I wasn't thinking of it that way.
We're
Burnham and Tilly were the other two. Mm-hmm. So, I would have liked to have done multiple, but I couldn't. So
we should do a poll on our Facebook page.
We should, if I can figure out how to set up a poll and list like every character that's ever been on the show.
It's going to be 30 questions long. Get ready.
That's right. So I'll throw it. Which one do you guys want to go next?
Craig.
You want me to go next?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm with you on Pike. I thought he was not riveting is a little bit too much, but I thought he was very, very, very enjoyable to watch him.
It was convincing. Anson Mount
played that part, huh?
It was convincing.
Very much so. I thought he was great. He had that little bit of a southernish, you know, kind of attitude that you would not southern. I mean, he was. You could tell he was playing a little bit on the southern side because of some of the things he said. But no, his attitude towards captaining was kind of like in line with what you would see have seen with Kirk and stuff like that. And from
but
that
kind of
era.
And I like the fact that they made that distinction that every captain has their own style.
Yes. But he had that swagger as what I was getting at.
Like I didn't detect a whole lot of swagger out of him. He was
Pike.
Yeah. He was a man to come in, knock heads, take names, get it done. Confidence in his crew.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know we're going to get it done, so let's get it done. You know, that was he was totally different from Kirk, in my opinion.
Well, I wouldn't say he was like Kirk. I said he just had that his own swagger. Well, at least he was in line with the way you've seen captains in the past, is what I was trying to get.
I mean, because he didn't say, "Oh, so Saru, that's your sister."
What's your number?
Right. What's her? Hello, yeah, oh, whoa.
Number, dude. I was going to say Pike, but as a couple of runners up, I like Tilly a lot. I think she's fun. But Saru, I think I really like seeing Doug Jones pull that character off.
Okay, fair enough. So we're giving a one pick plus two. We'll give you the same thing if you want it, Chuck. But you have to first say, if you're only choosing one, who would it be?
So you both, just so I'm clear, you both said Pike.
Pike. With a strong, at least on my part, a very strong leaning that, you know, it was very close between a couple of characters. But yeah, if I had to choose one, I'd say Pike.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Saru at the top of my list.
Okay.
I thought he was, except for his backstory, which we all agree could have used a little work. Seemed a little weird, but
are you talking about from the short?
I do like how he evolved through the two seasons. His, mm-hmm. You know, almost dying, changing, realizing what his race was and what it's become.
Then not giving a crap.
And, you know? Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, yeah,
exactly. Well, watching him grapple, it was almost like Spock grappling with his humanity. It was him saying, "I'm not afraid anymore," and he had to learn how to deal with that. At first, it came out a little too boisterous.
Let him fight, Captain. Yeah. I want blood. Yeah,
I'm unplugged.
So, yeah, and kudos to Doug Jones, as we mentioned before. He did a great job. I love that actor. There were a number of runner-ups, though. Tilly's right up there at the top of my list. I really wish, or maybe she'll still go on the cruise, Mary Wiseman. I think she would be hilarious to hang out with, based on what the other actors tell about what happens, goes on behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. We didn't see quite so much of Laurel, Mary Chifo, this season. I enjoyed her very much in the first season. She was more of a secondary character in the second, and that sort of disappointed me because I really enjoyed her in the first season. The nothing against Anson Mount. I think he did a great job. I think he did what he needed to do, but he wasn't CJ's probably going to crucify me for this. He wasn't in my top five.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, I mean, if everybody gave the same answer, that would be pretty, it'd be very strange. Pretty
that
boring at the same time.
That never happens on this show.
Although, no.
I totally agree with you on Saru, though, because I enjoyed seeing Pike a lot this season, but Saru, I really enjoy overall for a lot of the reasons you stated, is seeing him kind of trying to dial himself back a little bit and bring himself forward, so to speak.
Bummed that we didn't get to learn more about Arium, but hey, that's the unpredictability of the writers. That it's like, hey, it wasn't very nice of us to try and build up this backstory in one episode and then just yank it away in the other. So, hey, we were just getting acquainted with that character and fascinated by her backstory, gone.
They did it in the same episode. Her backstory and her death was the same episode.
Oh my.
Oh my.
Yeah, that was not right.
Well, part of me has a strange fascination that I don't mind that. I'd rather be surprised than predictable. I don't want a show that I can say, here's what happens and here's what's going to happen. And Donna says, you could write this show so many times on all the other shows that we watch, because I know what the next line is going to be. I know how this, watching a detective show go, he did it halfway through the show, only to find out he did it. Like, how'd you know, Doug? We've been doing that for years. And I get kind of bored with predictable shows. And I like that, dare I say it, Game of Thrones, here today, dead tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that's all we got to say about that.
Indeed. Indeed.
That was a short segment about that survey. Nice job cutting through that short survey.
No problem. I'll be interested to see if, Craig, you said you have it now. So maybe it's,
I just did it. Actually, I did it while y'all were talking about it.
Okay, cool. So maybe it's just rolling out slowly to everybody.
So now it's you and me head to head for that $100 Amazon.
Yeah, boy.
Arm wrestling for it.
All right. Well, I think it's about time to refill. Actually, get Poe in here, and I want Poe to actually, charge up the lithium chamber.
It takes those 5 minutes to do your time crystals.
Okay. And get out of here. You can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, all one word, with the number 4.com, on Twitter, Comedy Forecast, Facebook, Comedy Forecast. Again, you get the idea. You guys still rolling along with that other show you guys do?
Coming up on 14 years, May 1st. Technorama. That's crazy. That show's still going. I don't know how or I don't know why, but why do we do that, Craig?
Well, it's because we don't know when to stop.
It's just fun hanging out and geeking out and telling strange stories. So, yeah, and listening to us try and pronounce names on the history segment.
I just have a good time doing it.
That's right. When you're having fun, you might as well keep on keeping on. Yeah. So you can find that over at chuckchat.com/technorama.
Alrighty. And so it's time to hit the theme. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek, Don't put on the red shirt. So in 930 years, will red shirts still be a bad thing to be?
Maybe.
They'll wear blue.